Good. How are you?
Hey, Rich.
So good. What a great day, right?
Yeah. Nice fresh rain last night.
We need a little more of that. I like it.
I do too.
I'm going to go ahead and start the recording so everyone's on notice that this meeting is recorded. It looks like we have one more caller with the last two digits of 99. Can you state your name so that I can put it on the record?
Mary, that's me, Steve Van Valkenburg. I think I've got it on there twice.
Oh, you're here twice. Okay.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay. As long as I want to make sure that I get the attendance correct.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Bill. Oh, you're on mute.
You're on mute.
Okay, I guess I'm off mute. Be still my heart. I didn't realize we would be like in amidst the legend of the unemployment insurance community. I would have
thought we're putting a suit on, right?
How are you, Bill?
Good, darling.
Hey, Richard. How are you?
Good.
Long time no see. Shame on me.
No kidding. You're probably the longest serving guy out there now, aren't you?
I think you're probably right, and that's going to probably change here in short order. I'm going to probably talk to the powers that be, maybe Q3. At the end of this year, I'm going to go play more golf after 43 years at ATC. It's time to go hustle grandkids' baseball games and dance recitals and hit the golf course. So it's been a blast.
There you go.
Exciting. Congratulations, Rich.
Thanks.
good, Bill. How are you? Oops. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Boy, you're hanging in there still.
18 more months.
Oh. Who's counting, right?
Who's counting? Looks like we're going to have just a little bit of a delay. It looks like we've got three people that showed up at Olean Walker for our virtual meeting.
Oh.
So Justin is taking care of that, so he'll be right with us.
Let's see, I'm about 8 months, 12 days, 6 hours, 19 days.
Can you see us all?
Can you hear us all?
Can you hear us all?
There we go.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
I'm sorry I'm late. I had to take care of some business. Some riffraff showed up in the building today. Nah, I'm just joking, gentlemen. Just joking. And so we had to get a room ready for them today. So, not expected, but well appreciated. We have Jeff, we have Robert, Jeff, and Dan. They're in office in their room 44. Gentlemen, could you wave your hands to say hi to everybody? Who's off camera? Can't even see him. He's hiding. Well, okay. Well, there he goes. Is that Robert? Is that who that was? All right. Well, so thanks for waiting. I apologize for the delay. Welcome to our Employer Advisory Council meeting today. I think you guys know I'm Justin Williams, the Director for the Employment Insurance Program out of the state of Utah. The delay, I apologize for the delay. However, we have kind of a short meeting anyway, so this is a welcome distraction, and that way I can at least say that we filled up the time all the way to 3:30. So when Kevin comes in and starts talking about legislative matters. All right, so why don't we get right into it? I have two matters of open business. I need to check with Mary. Mary, do we have full quorum for the approval of minutes?
I believe so. Can the gentleman in the conference room tell me who you are again so I can mark it off and make sure, because we're right on the cusp of a quorum or not. Tell me your name again. Okay.
Robert Montano.
Okay.
And Jeff Worthington.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yep, you've got a quorum now.
Okay. It's because we showed up in person, right?
Well, so you saved the day, actually. So without you guys, we wouldn't have been able to have the full forum. So thank you for showing up today. All right, so have you guys had a chance to review the minutes from December?
Yeah, 33 pages worth.
Did you get it?
Yeah, I printed them. You guys, I don't believe I've ever received them. But that's all right. Trust me, it's good. I mean, I don't even receive them either. Back in that very meeting today, but I trust the people that said you are.
Right. I'll make the motion and we accept the minutes.
Alright. Anyone want to second that motion?
I'll second it.
Okay, everyone, take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Wait for Mary to give me the thumbs up.
Go.
Okay. Anyone opposed to approving the minutes? I think the silence is golden. Okay. Right, great. Thank you for that. Let's move on to our next business item. I wanted to introduce our newest member of the council. It's a familiar face from times gone by. I reached out a couple weeks ago and asked William Starks, otherwise known as Bill Starks, to represent the public on the council, and he not only said yes, but he jumped at the opportunity saying thank you so much, and so I thought I'd give Bill a couple minutes to introduce himself. Bill, I know you're a new stranger, but we want to familiarize with everybody here.
Hi, everyone. I think I know probably more than half of you anyways on in 2014, that, for those who didn't know, at the end of the year, and I was the UI director, hired a Michelle Beebe, and for 10 years, and I moved down to St. George. I went to work for our National Association of Workforce Agencies for 5 years, and so currently I'm doing a little part-time consulting for the American Institute for Full Employment. I also am the president of our HOA, which is turning into a much bigger job than I ever imagined. It's one of the biggest ones in St. George, and so it's been a learning experience, to say the least. I'm also on the board of directors for the St. George Wine Guild. Down here, and we've raised over $100,000 for just different worthy causes down here. And I try to sneak in a little traveling and golfing and biking in between, but it seems like I'm getting less time for leisure as I'm signing up for these boards. And you know, I actually did jump at the chance once he told me it was virtual. So, anyways, I'm glad to stick my nose back into unemployment a little bit.
Well, thanks, Bill. We were really excited to have you back into this fold. You've got a lot of experience. So we're really, real appreciative that you were willing to come aboard and help out. And it sounds like you've kind of just toiled away and gotten lazy in your retirement.
Yeah. Well, welcome back. We're glad to have you. It's good to see you too.
So this will be a lesson for you and Mary when you retire. You know, don't sign up for too many boards.
Well, next time I'm down there, I'll get a tea time. You can give me another lesson.
Okay, I'll give Coral Canyon. So.
Gotcha.
Thanks, Bill. We're looking forward to many, many meetings with you and sharing your insight on that. So, all right, let's jump over to our next item of business. We got together and we thought to ourselves, what would the council want to talk about? And there's a couple of different items we'll be looking at the agenda today. Kevin Burt's going to discuss the recently concluded legislative session a little bit later on. I'll, of course, provide you with everyone's favorite topic, the UI Trust Fund update. But before all that, I wanted to start off with just a little touch base of the ID theft impact that unemployment insurance has been feeling over the course of the last year. I don't know if you guys really felt the sting of it or if you felt the impact of it. So we wanted to just touch base a little bit with that. So I invited Leanne Madsen and Tyler Sorensen, and probably be mostly Tyler. He's our senior business analyst who does a lot of work behind the scenes to give you an idea of the scope of what we're dealing with and some of the ideas of what we're actually doing to help combat it, at least within the unemployment program. So Tyler, take it away.
Thank you, Justin. Notice that I recognize a lot of the names on the roster here, so for everybody else, I'm very pleased to make your acquaintance. Like Justin said, I'm Tyler Sorensen, the Senior Business Analyst with the Unemployment Insurance Division, and he's asked me to talk a little bit about our experience with ID theft and imposter fraud. For our purposes today, I'll define imposter fraud pretty loosely as someone who is filing an unauthorized unemployment insurance claim for someone else. And this is something that we've been familiar with the unemployment insurance community for more than 20 years. After Hurricane Katrina, Louisiana experienced a very large surge of imposter claims. Georgia and Florida, after the 2008 economic downturn, experienced a large surge of unemployment insurance claims. So it's something that we knew about, but it never really experienced a surge of large numbers. Generally in Utah, before COVID, imposter fraud, we would see dozens of times a year, usually between 24 and 48 times. And in Utah, being a family-oriented state, the imposter fraud was generally family-oriented. It was parents filing for occasionally we had parents filing for children. We had children filing for parents. A lot of divorcees filing for their former spouse. It was things like that. And there was also a little bit of just the general stolen identity theft that was folded in. It wasn't something that was really a primary reality for us, but we did have a number of processes that were in effect to help us address that specific issue. Again, we'd never really received these in any sort of large numbers, but we did have processes in place which, when COVID came along, we knew that there was going to be an acceleration in this type of activity. We had anticipated that we would get, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of these. What we did realize was that in 2020 and 2021, we would really be facing international criminal conspiracies that are capable of filing tens of thousands of these claims a day. And in Utah, really for us, it turned out to be tens of thousands of claims a year. Specifically, what I'd like to address today is really the new normal, where we've gone from the last couple of years, both years we've had more than 50,000 imposter claims filed. At this point, the imposter claims have slowed down to where it's just hundreds of claims a week. That's a lot, but it generally, it's where we haven't experienced any major surges for the last 6 months, so we're pretty comfortable in saying that this is a standard amount that we're going to be receiving for the foreseeable future. One of the things that I think it's important to stress is that our division operates in a regulatory environment where every claim that is filed has equal access to our adjudication and appeal processes. What that means is that if we get an unemployment insurance claim for Elvis Presley with the Social Security number 12345678 9, once that's filed, we are required to treat that the same as any other employment insurance claim. Ultimately, we look at it and recognize that while the king will live always in our hearts, he's probably not eligible for unemployment insurance in the state of Utah. Nevertheless, that claim is treated the same as any other claim that's filed. So for an employer, the experience of one of these imposter claims is generally going to come from receiving a, or begin with receiving a form from our monetary department or a notice of claim filed, which is issued in the name of a claimant who has either never worked for you or is still currently working for you. So basically what that means is that person's information has been stolen and the claim has been filed, and if they indicated that you were their employer, then you have a possibility of receiving one of these notice of claim filed forms. And depending on that circumstance, whether the person has never worked for you or has worked 40 hours for you or continues to work for you, obviously that is going to create serious issues with their possible unemployment insurance claim. So I think one of the other things that I would like to stress is that your receiving one of these forms is not an indication that the department is unaware of the fraudulent nature of the claim. What we're doing is we want independent confirmation from you that this is an imposter claim. And if so, we have processes in place to make sure that that claim goes unpaid. When we send that form out to you, more likely than not, and really it's more than 95% of the time, it's already flagged, and we know that there's a potential issue with that claim. We're just waiting for that last bit of confirmation from you as the employer that, yes, we were correct in identifying this as fraud, and we're able to handle it accordingly after that. Another reason we send out these forms is that we're dealing with an imposter claim, which means that when the imposter claim is filed, generally we don't have the real claimant, or in this circumstance, the victim of the theft. We don't have their real contact information. We usually don't have their phone number. We don't have their address. Most of these claims are the first claim that's ever been filed for the claimant. So contacting you as the employer is really our first means of establishing contact with the victim of this theft. We've also noticed that as imposters become more desperate, we're receiving an increasing number of fake identification documents, so fake IDs, and we're getting calls to our staff directly from the imposters. And we're having imposters attempt to attend appeal hearings and all sorts of things like that. What is incredibly nice for us, when we receive one of these calls, if we have information like a notice of claim filed that has been completed by the employer, and we can look at that and see that, you know, we're getting a call from a claimant that's insisting that they filed a legitimate unemployment insurance claim, and we have information now from an employer where we can just, you know, engage with the imposter and explain that, you know, we contacted your employer and they indicate that you're still employed. Rather than a 20-minute conversation, they just hang up the phone. Usually it's much easier for them to just move on, file another claim. But the more information that we have from you, especially those disqualifying those disqualifying factors, like a claimant who has never worked or a claimant that is still working, that obviously are going to create substantial issues and obstacles for an unemployment insurance claim. Our department having that information from you remains essential. One other thing that I'd like to mention is that if your employee has been a victim of ID theft and an unemployment insurance claim has been filed, their best course of action is to call our care team. So that's our claim center. If they call our claim center, we can take a very quick statement from them and begin the process of withdrawing the claim. Eventually, they'll be put in contact with a fraud investigator, and it's a very brief process. We try and make sure that we're as sensitive as possible to the fact that we're dealing with victims of a crime, and we want to make sure that our process is efficient, making sure that we're able to get that claim withdrawn and get that victim of ID theft back on their way. Generally, when it comes to these, our department has been incredibly successful, and a significant part of that success in making sure that these imposter claims aren't being paid is the amount of employer engagement that we have in our process. When we're sending out a monetary form or when we send out a notice of claim filed, we're generally getting that form back very quickly, and we want that to continue to remain the case. The reason being is that when it comes to these ID theft claims, we know that very few of these are actually getting paid. But we want to make sure that as few as possible get paid. The reason being is that these organizations maintain the capacity that if they see one claim go through, they have the potential to file. They're not going to file dozens of claims the next week or hundreds. They have the capacity to flood an unemployment insurance organization with tens of thousands of claims a day. We don't want that to happen. And the employer engagements that we've had in the past has been essential in preventing payments. And we hope that that continues to be the case in the future. And we're not anticipating any issues. We just want to reiterate the fact that it can be incredibly frustrating for an employer to receive one of these forms for a claimant that's still working or a claimant who has never worked for them. And when that's the case, it is still important that you fill out the form, send it back to us as quickly as possible, because while this information seems unhelpful or possibly redundant, it's essential when it comes to adjudicating these claims properly, preventing improper payments, and ultimately protecting the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. So that's really all I have. If any of you have any questions or if there's something that Justin or Leanne would like to contribute, that would be fantastic.
I just want to say thank you, Tyler. You did a wonderful job of explaining that and the importance of getting those 606s back to us so that we can properly adjudicate these claims. One thing I did want to point out is, thank goodness, Utah has always been a forward thinker. And we had a very strong ID theft plan in place prior to the pandemic, unlike many of the states. And so when we started getting hit with ID theft, we were ready for it. In fact, out of all of the payments that we made during the pandemic, only 0.34% of those paid were ID theft claims, so less, about one-third of 1% of all claims. So we did a really good job of stopping those, even though we had Tyler, filed during the pandemic, but we had tens of thousands or over 100,000, I'm not sure, but we were able to stop those.
Yeah, last time I checked, I think we were at 84,000 total. It's a bit of a vague number, but 84,000 over the course of the last 2 years. So it's, that's just an outrageous number of claims. It really boggles the mind. There have been other states, and generally the states that were really struggling with unemployment insurance, struggling with imposter claims because they didn't necessarily have good processes as they went into COVID. Those states are the ones where they had, potentially 60,000 claims filed over the course of the day. There was one state that, unfortunately, there was more than $110 million worth of imposter benefits issued over the course of a single weekend. So where we were able to sort of, in combination with the help from the employers, help from the claimants, and the processes that we already had into effect, those processes were able to scale and really address our needs during COVID. But, our dream that eventually these improper and imposter claims would go away, it just doesn't seem like that's going to happen. This will continue to be the reality for the foreseeable future.
Any questions?
Okay. Excellent, guys. Thanks for that information. I can echo what they just said. I just got back from a committee meeting with NASWA on Tuesday, and several states reported to have been impacted by very organized efforts for identity theft. In fact, as the states were explaining when they had gotten a big push to identity theft, you could almost see a wave. Like, you know, when you're at a baseball game, you watch the crowd go into a wave, and you watch it go around the stadium. You could almost envision that's how it went around the states, that you see one, and then a couple weeks later, the next neighboring state got hit by them as well. And so this is not something that's unique just to Utah, and it's not something we have been very careful, and we've been monitoring it. This is not something that is being leaked out of our program either. We are not losing information. The unfortunate part of this type of fraud is that it's usually you can glean a lot of information from outside and try to attempt to file a benefits-related identity theft claim. And we're not unique in our program either. Unemployment, food stamps, there's a lot of different programs that are experiencing the same kind of conduct out there. We're just a little bit more lucky in that we have a nice relationship with our employer counterparts to be able to catch that information very quickly. And so I think a lot of the numbers, when we talk about the percentages of losses, we're talking about a very small number that initially got detected early on in the process. I think if you were to look at our most recent efforts, you're going to see a very almost minute and non-existent number. And that's really a credit to Tyler and Tyler's team. They do a really good job of data mining on the back end and making sure that the unemployment program in Utah is very robust. So, thanks, guys. Okay, let's move on to my favorite topic. And mine's going to be quick, so let me share my screen real quick, and I will talk trust fund. Well, I know everybody. That's why you're all here, just to talk about how healthy the trust fund is, right? Okay. Let me know. Is that big enough, or do I need to make that a little bit bigger?
Bigger.
Kept that in PDF because it was a little easier to manipulate. But how's that? Is that looking better for you guys?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is actually on your agenda as well, and so it's on the very bottom. And so I just wanted to touch base real quick. And this is a good – I was impressed by it, and thanks to Patrick. He puts a lot of these numbers together, and Patrick is our wizard behind the screen when it comes to gathering up the data. This actually is a good snapshot of where we're at compared to where we were a year ago. And what you can tell overall is that – as opposed to last year's Employer Advisory Council that my very first one as director, where all I had was bad news to tell everybody with regards to the trust fund, because Kevin had got to say, hey, I'm out of here. You get to tell everyone the bad news. This year I get to give you some good news. And so that's actually reassuring. And I do know Kevin's on the phone, so or on the call as well. So I'm not saying anything he doesn't already know when it comes to he just left me holding the bag on the bad news last summer. But we're looking good. Unemployment rate is down compared to the year before, and short unemployment rate, which is those who are getting unemployment benefits versus the rest of the population, that's down again, average duration down. And now 12 weeks is generally where you're going to see that number really hover. 11 to 12 weeks is kind of a common theme on average unemployment weeks, and that's just because that's just the average of what you're looking at for everybody who's filing for unemployment. Exhaustion rates, 26%, again, down. It's a little higher than I think we'd be comfortable with, but it is in the range of where we've historically been, in the 20s, usually the mid-20s is kind of where we're sitting at in most years. Contributions collected are up, and that's a good sign. Benefits paid down, that's a really good sign, especially compared to when we looked at the 12 months before, when we're looking at over $500 million. That was paid out. So, and those numbers, the 145, that's a little bit higher for what we'd be expecting, but it's trending in the proper direction. Trust fund balance is up. We're almost getting back to the mythical $1 billion line, which is good. We're actually trending really, really well. And then our average high cost multiple. Now, this is a little bit, this number, don't get alarmed by this number. It's a delayed number. And so if you looked at it and compared it to the real numbers now, you'd probably see it's probably closer to one or slightly over one at the moment. This is an older number where it's comparing quarter end of 2021, so last year's. But it's still in good state, in a good shape right now. moving on to the next page, when we're looking at, and I need to make this a little bit smaller to fit it on the screen. When we're looking at our graph of contribution versus the benefits that are paid out, this is the double helix DNA graph that we'd always have talked about. And the good news is, and what I want to highlight here is the 2012 through 2019, it's that abnormally long spell where we had taken in a lot of taxes and paid out very little. That was the long years of growth that we had in Utah. Of course, now that's a credit to the economics of the state of Utah over the course of that decade have been really positive. And then we had our spike in 2020 and 2021. But you're noticing it went back to its double helix look, which is when benefits are low, when benefit payments are low, contributions are up, and vice versa. And that's actually encouraging as well, because the program is beginning to operate in a normal scope, aside from the anomaly known as the pandemic economy that we have experienced in the last 2 years. So this is actually encouraging. And then, of course, when we move into our trust fund balance projections, we're looking at these numbers as well. And these numbers are good. Now, of course, adequate, minimum adequate, maximum adequate, they are a bit of a chasing, it feels like you're a dog chasing a car sometimes when we're trying to get into that range, because that range is always increasing as well as the economy goes up. And so we're constantly trying to make sure that as we collect our benefits, we're collecting at a rate that's faster than the way that minimum and maximum is growing. And, of course, that is also doing the same as well. If we look at our trust fund balance as of May 2nd, $955 million. So we're looking really good. And I think when we get our updated estimates again, we're going to be even closer to that billion mark. Of course, we need to be over $1 billion to be in the minimum and maximum range. That's partially a sign of inflation, partially a sign of a really good economy. And just with how many employers and how much wages that we have to insure in the state of Utah. So that's actually good signs when that grows like that. What we need to do is we just need to catch up. Now, this is normal. If you've looked at historically, you're looking at the numbers where the range has been higher than what we've been than we've been able to contribute and put back into the balance or the fund. That's normal because as we get hit, we have to recover, and that's what we're doing. And the recovery actually is better this year than it was last year. Last year I had some doom and gloom saying, oh man, we're not recovering as fast as we thought we would. Well, this year I can say we're looking a little more optimistic. Now I don't want to jinx it. I don't want to tell everyone we're going to be, I'm not making any guarantees because that'll get you into trouble faster than anything that you can get in trouble with. But if things trend well, then I think we're going to be looking at a really positive sign where we'll be caught up to our minimum level of for the reserve in a short order of time. What year that is, we can have a pool off record if you guys want to have a pool and then talk about what year we think we'll recover, but I don't want to come out and actually state when, but soon is probably the best answer for you. When we get down to the very bottom, these are the numbers everyone likes to look at, and I wanted to highlight a couple different things real quick. Of course, this is all the numbers that drive that graph that we were just looking at, and highlights the bottom three lines. That's where we're going to look at the balances from 21, 22, and 23. Now, of course, 22 and 23 are estimates, and that's why they're highlighted in the darker shades than the other shades that we have there. And so when we're looking at the balance as of 21, we're looking at a grand total of around $750 million. So when we look at compared to what we were last year, compared to what we are sitting right now, we're about $955. So we're about $200 million higher. Credit to the contributions unit for being able to collect that money and do it efficiently. What I want to highlight here is the reserve factors and the social costs. And of course, you guys know from last year's conversation, those from last December, those were rates that were locked in by the legislature. In a matter of 2022, the reserve factor and the social costs for 2022 were, oddly enough, they were the exact numbers that we were forecasting and we needed anyway. So the formula was actually driving us to this. Now, why did we get to that reserve factor and the social cost? Partially because we spent money, we used some of our ARPA money to help offset the impact of social costs. Remember, we used a lot of social cost money to waive the charge effects in the 2020 pandemic. So we were relieving a lot of charges to employers. And so we put $100 million back into the fund, specifically aimed at social costs. We were able to do some some legal wrangling to make sure that that was above board, and so that kept the social cost at a very reasonable rate. If you look historically, like the 2009, you'll see that those numbers have jumped up. Those are reactionary numbers to the economy, which is normal according to the formula, but by the efforts from the efforts with the legislature and with Kevin able to kind of help guide the legislature through that, we were able to mitigate that and help offset that. So it's better than having everyone sitting up at 0.004 for our social costs and then above 1.15 for our reserve factor. Now, when we look at 2022 and 23, what I'm highlighting here is that the cap, the legislative cap for both of those years, was the reserve factor is capped at 1.2. We are not expecting it this time. Now, I cannot guarantee this will happen next year. But as it stands right now, and you never know with that with the economy, because it could be, it could go south quick in a matter of moments. I think we learned that with the pandemic. But if everything stands good and it's good progress that we're making now, we do not expect to actually even have to touch up on those caps that the legislature set up. So that is actually a very positive sign. It's actually very good news. I think it's a credit to everybody on this call, but also to everyone who's working, and then also those who are setting the economic goals for the state. I think pat yourselves on the back. You guys have done a really good job. Employers are getting people back to work. People are working. Our unemployment rate really low. And so these are actually the really good signs. So I'm happy to report this is much better than last year's run, where I had doom and gloom and I had to talk to you guys through kind of some difficult times. I mean, we're back to being in good shape. So put on the party hats and those kazoo blowers or whatever and celebrate, at least for now. And so the estimates are looking good. I think we're looking at where we're going to be either really close or at the minimum. I think by 2023, if things are going as well as we think they might go, we're looking at maybe 24, 25 that you could probably look at where we're in the minimum adequate. So that's really good. And that would put us into a good average high cost multiple as well for the time period. So having said all this, with the good news and just waiting for you guys to shower me with congratulations and attaboys. I'm joking. I don't need any of that.
The shower's begun.
Does anyone have any questions for me on that?
Great job.
This is Bill. I have one question on, you have an additional column that I never had on my chart, modernization and special administrative funds column. And I notice it's going down rapidly right there. Is there still a modernization still going on or?
We are. We are modernizing our tax system. So the CATS, what we call the CATS system, is getting an upgrade to the .NET system, similar to what our benefits system had run through a few years back. And so I think, Bill, you remember this modernization fund that we were given ages ago. It's still just trickling down. We actually were expecting to have most of our modernization gone by now. However, when the CARES Act and ARPA and then the Continuing Assistance Act came through, it just infused so much money that we were able to utilize a lot of that. And so it's actually kind of delayed the reduction of it, but there's still plenty of money to be had there. So that's actually why we have that still in there, in that column there. And it's part of the trust fund, so that's where it has to live. That's why we have it listed under the graph now. I was going to say it's because the new director's just got awesome graphs now, but I didn't want to really call you out. Any other questions for me today? Okay, well, let me, I know we're running short on time, so I wanted to give Kevin some time to talk about the legislature. The good news is, and I'll give you a spoiler alert, the good news is there's not much to report on as it relates to unemployment, but looks like Kevin has a couple things he wanted to talk about, so let me hand it over to Kevin.
Hey, thanks, Justin. Patrick, I think you're going to pull up the slideshow. I appreciate Justin's invitation to come and talk to you guys. I don't know who invited Bill or Rich for that matter. Let's just kick them both off. It was
Casey.
Oh, okay. But happy to be back. So for those who don't know me, my name is Kevin Burt. I am a deputy director here at the Department of Workforce Services. I do provide support to unemployment insurance, as well as our eligibility division, our appeals division, and I do legislative affairs for the department as well. So Justin asked me to kind of go over some legislative impacts, and Justin's right. Not a lot of focus was on unemployment insurance, and that's actually an accomplishment that should be recognized to Justin and his team. The work that they did to make sure that we ran an efficient program with incredible integrity, meeting most timeliness, without resulting in a trust fund that went insolvent, is the reason why it wasn't a primary topic during the legislative session. Had Justin and his group not done a good job with the task assigned during the pandemic, it absolutely would have been a talking point during the legislative session. So the fact that it wasn't is really an indication of how well he's done and his team have done with the responsibilities given. And really the focus, a lot of the focus was on some of the federal spending or the funds that we received federally. But my presentation is primarily about workforce. We certainly have seen some labor shortages, workforce shortages. And so I thought the legislation that would be applicable to the workforce might be interesting to the group. So we'll start there. So Patrick, if you could flip to slide 2. One of the bills was House Bill 15. It's called the Child Care Amendments. And just for a little bit of background, the Department of Workforce Services administers a child care subsidy payment. The child care subsidy is available to certain individuals who are below an income threshold to help offset some of their child care costs. And what happened during the pandemic is so many of these low-income workers were actually let go, or furloughed at least, because the business is closed. Certainly the industries that were hit the hardest during the pandemic were the hospitality, leisure, travel, the food industries. And so a significant percentage of those individuals actually used licensed child care providers. And so there was a ripple effect. These workers were no longer able to work. Their children were now, they didn't need child care, couldn't afford it. And so you had so many child care providers now that didn't have a business. They went out of business as well. And so one of the things that did get created during the pandemic were some child care funds that were given to the Department of Workforce Services to support the child care industry. And we did that with operational grants. So essentially what we did is we helped offset the income losses of these child care providers, because what we knew is that eventually the economy would recover. Individuals would return to work, and then the child care need would be necessary to be able to return successfully to work. And so we needed as many child care providers to remain open and stay in the child care industry as possible. And so we did that with operational grants to be able to help offset some of those losses so that they stayed available even though their enrollment was down. We did health and safety grants. So even once everything opened, there were some health and safety expectations. And so what we did is we provided grants to help them improve their industry to be able to maintain health practices during the pandemic for the customers, or for the children that are coming back to the providers. Expanded summer programs to support employment. In fact, 91% of the assistance that we got went to providers to support providers. But the other thing we did is we tried to encourage work, because in order to be eligible for the child care subsidy, you have to be working. We waived some co-payments. We increased the income limit. We wanted to make it as doable for people to return to work as possible given the pandemic circumstances, and access to child care is critical. So HB 15 requires us to continue to do those things as well as report our efforts. And another thing it did is it loosened some of the regulation. And so now residential facilities can care for more children without a license. And that was pretty controversial, but the goal was to expand child care as much as possible to be able to support people returning to work. And that was in HB 15, and our Office of Child Care did an incredible job with that. Patrick, if you could go to the next slide. I thought this might be interesting to the group. So driver's license testing modifications. So in 2018, DWS worked with the legislative staff to pass a bill that allowed refugees and asylees to get their first driver's license test in their native language and their first recertification. What we have found with refugees and asylees that come legally into Utah, we're able to try and resettle them into housing to get them their needs met. But one of the hardest things is to get them a driver's license, and that's really critical for them to be able to find employment. And so in 2018, we added this flexibility to the driver's license testing modifications. As you know, in 2020 and 2021, we had a lot of Afghan refugees come to the States, and about 900 came to Utah. Now, because of the emergency circumstances with the Afghan refugees, they actually were not classified as refugees or asylees. They were classified as humanitarian parolees. And so, unfortunately, the legislation passed in 2018 did not apply to that classification. And so these 900 Afghan refugees who were ready to work, unfortunately, couldn't get their driver's license test in their native language, even though, they were here legally and wanting to work, many of them incredibly skilled. So what we did is we proactively, as a department, reached out, got the same sponsors of the 28 legislation, and in HB 163, humanitarian parolees were added to this flexibility with an immediate implementation date. And so we've been able to immediately implement this. The governor signed it, was one of the first bills to sign, and we were immediately able to get a lot of these refugees, or in this case, humanitarian parolees from Afghanistan, their driver's license to go to work. And so as if we've been there, they certainly benefited from the legislation. Go back to some unemployment insurance. This was from the special session. Justin talked about it. And he talked about most of it. One thing that I certainly did want to highlight is, as you go through, and for any of you that do legislative work, we have constantly asked this council to understand the algorithm used in unemployment insurance or the model used to determine the tax rates, and to be able to support that, because it has proven to be incredibly effective, and what we don't want to do is alter that, because it has worked incredibly well during a recession, the Great Recession. It worked incredibly well also during the 10-year good economic run. And so now the pandemic hit, and again, we were in an incredible spot to be able to weather the pandemic with a solvent trust fund when 23 states went insolvent. However, there were certainly a lot of questions about the tax rates of employers. Specifically, a lot of these employers of the industries that I just mentioned, your tax rate as an employer is based on your experience with unemployment insurance. And so some of the employers that would see the largest increase in their tax rate, we tried to offset some of that with socializing some of the costs. However, we knew some of them would see an increase in their tax rate just when they're recovering, just when they're opening back up, just when they're coming back in. And so there was a lot of legislators that were concerned about that increase hurting their ability to recover when they were already facing challenges to recover and return to their pre-pandemic profits. And so we had to decide, okay, are we going to work with the legislative body to try and preserve the model that's used in unemployment insurance, or are we going to allow them to alter it dramatically? Because there certainly was discussion about altering it dramatically. But we were able to get to a good spot of capping the rates for calendar year 22, 23, and 24, which we believe was a good compromise without jeopardizing the solvency of the fund. And as Justin just went over, it has not. In fact, we believe that the rates based on the algorithm will not reach the caps in 2023 and 2024. So in the end, we believe that we got to a good spot with legislative leadership without jeopardizing the solvency of the fund or changing the algorithm dramatically that is proven, or at all, that is proven to be incredibly effective. And so I think that was incredible work by Justin and his team with the legislative body. It was certainly reasonable in their discussions. And in the end, it has proven to be the correct response, because we've been able to keep those tax rates lower without jeopardizing that fund. So a lot of work went into that. And right now, I looked at a measure. The Utah's unemployment fund has been depleted by about 20%. And so, yes, it has been challenged. But to be out of the pandemic, or certainly making progress towards being out of the pandemic, and only depleted 20% is pretty incredible. The other thing that we did see is $100 million of federal relief was actually deposited into the fund to minimize the taxes collected from employers as well. That was from the CARES Act. The CARES Act had a spend date by the end of last calendar year, so December 31st of 2021. And instead of sending it back to the feds to spend in other ways, because it had to be expended by that time, that money was deposited. We were able to explain the value of depositing in the trust fund, naturally decreasing those tax rates because the trust fund increased in value, and then we don't have to collect that $100 million in taxes. And so those were pretty significant wins for unemployment insurance in the Department of Workforce Services. And then I do have another, Patrick, if you can go to the next one, that is related to the Unemployment Insurance Division. We have an account called the Special Administrative Expense Account, or some refer to it as the Penalty and Interest Fund. And so as part of doing unemployment insurance, there are some penalties and interest assigned to individuals who are not being compliant with the unemployment insurance program. So that doesn't go into the trust fund, or it's in a separate account called the Special Administrative Expense Account. If that fund is used for things other than unemployment insurance is reimbursed the efforts it used to collect it, but it can be used for a variety of things. DWS has really always tried to have it focus on reemployment. Because it's related to unemployment efforts or unemployment administration, we wanted to focus on reemployment initiatives to reduce the need for unemployment insurance benefits. And in order to spend this, we need authority from the legislative body to be able to do so. And so we requested that during our Appropriations Committee and received that authority to do so. And some of the programs that those penalty and interest funds support, ACE Veteran Credentials, that's credentialing for returned vets or the spouses of vets to be able to help them gain employment. Project Strive is employment for individuals who are blind or visually impaired. We have expanded our apprenticeship outreach. One of the things the legislative body has funded is a apprentice commissioner, but no funds related to helping expand the apprenticeship program. And so we use this special administrative expense account to be able to do that, as well as other IT modernization and workforce initiatives. So it's really incredible to kind of see how these funds, when people aren't using the program correctly, are converted to be able to fund programs that we think are pretty critical and pretty important to the workforce, certainly incredibly vulnerable populations, or populations that need the support, like veterans and individuals who are blind or visually impaired. The last thing I have is just a couple graphs that I thought might be interesting to the group. So, Patrick, if you go to this, this is kind of a monthly summary of how the unemployment rate went month to month to month. The blue line is the Utah rate. The orange bar is the national rate. And you can see it goes to the beginning of 2020 to the end of 2021. And you can see just how quick that economic collapse happened, but also how quick that economic recovery happened, not only in Utah, but across the nation. And you can also see that Utah's economy has just proven to be more resilient than the national economy. That was true during the Great Recession, and it's also been true during the pandemic as well. The latest number was close to I think we did publish a 1.9% unemployment rate at one time, but it recalibrates. It's always kind of a lagging indicator, and I think the latest was 2.0. But to be at a 2% unemployment rate is just incredibly low, historically low. We've never seen anything like that. And then a couple things. This shows kind of the wave that happened with new unemployment claims in Utah. You can see the spike that happened, but you can see we've returned to pre-pandemic levels for the most part. There certainly is discussions or concerns about potential recession with the inflation in such that it's hurting the economy or certainly dragging the economy. But currently, right now, Utah's done a good job of really returning those claims to pre-pandemic levels. Any discussion about unemployment insurance claims being a deterrent to people returning to work has just not, it doesn't have a lot of validity to it. We're at a lower level of unemployment claims than we were pre-pandemic. And so the unemployment program did its exact purpose of helping people through the pandemic, but it's not encouraging people to not return to work, as you can see, how fast we dipped in the need for the claims after the pandemic and after we figured out that balance of health needs and economic needs. The next graph just talks about the SNAP benefit or the food stamp benefit. I put this one on more for Dave. I don't see Dave. Dave is on here, but he certainly that cares about it with retailers. But you can kind of see that we're actually in food stamp enrollment, we're lower than pre-pandemic levels as well. That one never really grew, and it actually was mostly because of unemployment insurance. When unemployment insurance was given to individuals with that additional benefit amount, it counted against the SNAP benefit. And so you can see right when the pandemic hit, SNAP enrollment actually dropped dramatically, and it's because people became income ineligible because of the unemployment benefit they were receiving. There was some recovery once that stimulus payment was removed, but you can see it has gradually recovered as the economy has recovered, and we're lower enrollment than we were pre-pandemic. The other graph that's on there is not as good, and that's for medical. So that's Medicaid and CHIP enrollment, so a subsidized medical coverage. That one has some unwinding to do. Currently, the federal requirement, or there is a federal requirement that because it was a health pandemic, if an individual was determined eligible for medical coverage, they are not able to close that person until the national public health emergency has expired. And that national public health emergency is still exists, so individuals are not transitioning off the medical benefit. This is not a cash benefit, though. It's simply medical coverage so people can get medical care in response to a health emergency. And so I think that there is some unwinding that will occur within DWS probably next year. It currently expires in July, but there is discussion that will likely be extended. And so I think that over the next year, we'll start to unwind that and return medical enrollment back to pre-pandemic levels. That's one of our last programs that's still seeing an inflated enrollment number because of that requirement to keep individuals open. And then the last one I think was a pretty important bill. If you don't know, the state of Utah has a state bird, we have a state tree, we have a state flag. SB 261 was a bill that would introduce Utah's 80s rock band. And I'm just making this up, it's not true. But if there was, Patrick, who would win? Go ahead and give me a click here. It'd be Rat. Rat would be Utah's rock band, in my opinion. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions about the legislative session for DWS or for unemployment insurance. Or Rat. You can talk about Rat if you'd like as well.
I can't believe we're ending the council meeting by talking about Rat.
Cool.
Goes round and round, Kevin. Goes round and round.
Okay.
Kevin, I just wanted to add, you know, that I don't know if everyone realizes how important that was to maintain that formula with all the winds going against you during COVID. And I never thought I'd see anything worse than the Great Recession. And you guys saw a lot worse than that. And to retain that formula through all the, legislators that, think the sky's falling, it was a big deal. So congratulations on that.
Oh, thanks, Bill. And like I said, it really was a matter of if we had massive fraud in the state of Utah, unemployment would have absolutely been targeted. But because that wasn't an issue, that was great. But then it was a matter of, hey, increasing taxes, because we did have to recover because it was depleted so quickly. But I think we were able to kind of show the model. We certainly got support from this council to be able to sustain it. And then it was just a matter of negotiation. Do we fight it to the death, or do we figure out some kind of a compromise that's short-term? And we think the compromise has turned out to be the wise.
It was a perfect one, because it doesn't look like you're even going to hit those caps.
yeah. And that, sometimes legislation is passed just to make people feel comfortable with it.
Sure.
Because they're concerned about the model. Or there's not, or we're communicating, hey, we think we're going to be okay, but they just want to insure it. And so we're certainly willing to be able to do that. And I think we're in a good spot. Even if a recession does happen, I think the nice thing is Utah, certainly in the trust fund solvency, I think we're in a pretty good spot. Keep in mind that 23 states went insolvent. I wrote down they borrowed nationally. States have borrowed $32 billion in federal dollars to continue to pay state unemployment benefits. And keep in mind that $32 billion that they borrowed, not only do they have to replenish their own trust fund to be able to continue to pay state benefits, they will have to repay those federally borrowed dollars with interest. And so the employer will be taxed to see an increase in their federal tax rate and their state tax rate to replenish the state and to repay the feds. And so it really, the model has improved to be incredibly effective, and so that certainly helps selling it as well.
I would add, I think it's 10 states are still paying back their outstanding debt still as well.
Yeah, the nice thing the states had versus the recession is there was lots of money that was authorized to the states, and many of the states, similar to our $100 million, repurposed some of that to pay back some of those federal borrowed dollars. And so they needed it quickly, but then they had to repaid it. But in our case, we didn't go back to repay federally borrowed dollars. We actually reimbursed our state trust fund to decrease the needed state tax increase. And so while it's good that they don't have that debt, if they would have been better prepared for the pandemic, they could have repurposed those funds for other needs in the state or decreased their state unemployment tax like Utah did. So even though they don't have that federal debt, a lot of money went to that federal debt, which could have been used better in the state.
Yeah. Yeah, because actually there's a lot of states that they vote on benefits and tax rates at the legislative level every year, and that makes for horrible long-term, sound tax policy.
Yeah. And some of it hurts claimants, to be honest. I was just talking to a state that their legislature passed a 12-week cap, meaning that a claimant can only get up to 12 weeks of unemployment benefits. We've been able to strike a balance of low taxes, not over replacing lost wages, but also making the program that is valuable to economic recovery still available to the people who are unemployed through no fault of their own. A lot of states right now to recover are reducing access to the actual claim for people who are laid off, and that's unfortunate as well.
Yeah, and it really decreases the economic stimulus that benefits, benefit.
Yep. All right, Justin, that's it for me.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. All right, let's just cover real quick. Next meeting we're going to have on August 11th, so set your calendars. I know you guys are all looking forward to it, August 11th. I believe what we're going to do is, and we will have, it'll be virtual again, just like we have now, because I think it allows us a nice statewide model. But I think we're going to start mimicking what the Labor Commission does with theirs. They do also provide a room for anyone who wants to come in, so... we'll also have that available for anyone if you're in town, if you want to come down, swing down. We have some very comfortable chairs, I think, as the three gentlemen in our room there are enjoying. And so we'll do that, but guarantee we'll make sure that everyone's able to attend. Okay, with that, do I have a motion to adjourn the meeting? And I think the room is seconding those motions. Is that correct, gentlemen?
Correct.
Sorry.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the ayes have it. If Robert, Jeff, and Dan, if you guys could stick around for a sec, Mary wants to confirm some email addresses and talk to you real quick. So if you guys can, when she turns off the recording, if you guys can stick around real fast.
Okay.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, all.
Thanks, everyone.
See you. Bye. Thanks. Bye.
What's this say for?
Oh, email address update.
Your information.
Your address. Anyway, that's okay.
I'll join you guys in 404. Mary, if you want to just make sure we get the email, and then I think it's Dan we have to confirm is staying on for another term, right?
Yeah, we have an expired term with one of you gentlemen, so let me get the recording off.
Yeah, let's get the recording in. All right, I'll swing by.
Okay. All right, I'll turn off Jamboard then.
Yeah.
You shouldn't even have been here, huh?
Thank you.
Well, yeah, that'd be fine.
Mary, did you need that, or do you want Justin to grab that?
I will grab it, Maria. Thank you. So, Mr. Are you there? Oh, no. Maria. Sounds good. Period. Travel safe. Period.